Hello and welcome to Mythmakers. Mythmakers is the podcast for fantasy fans and fantasy creatives brought to you by the Oxford Centre for Fantasy. My name is Julia Golding. I'm an author, but I'm also director of the centre. And today I am joined by Victoria Goddard, who actually was invited on the podcast by special request of one of our listeners. So don't say we don't deliver. So if you've got any more ideas for guests, please do send them in, because for me, it's been an enormous pleasure over this week actually getting to understand and read Victoria's fantasy works. So first of all, hello to Victoria.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So Victoria, where are we talking to you? Where's your home base?
I live in Prince Edward Island, which is the smallest of the Canadian provinces. It's in eastern Canada in the Maritimes.
Fantastic. So should we have a little overview of the kind of things you write so people understand where you sit in the fantasy pantheon, as it were? What kind of series do you write and how would you describe them?
Well, I tend to tell people I write in the general kind of mythopoeic tradition from the Inklings onwards. So this was a nice fit with your podcast. I'm kind of one of those English-derived medievalists by background. My family's British, and first, my dad was an immigrant, actually, and always been very, very fond of them. I like writing kind of a vast, sprawling, interconnected narrative universe, exploring different elements of it. And I tend to like writing, I suppose, the stories that happen around the epics. What's going on after you've had the grand speech? How do you get from there to the actual work of living? And how do you do it? That's something I find really interesting.
So you recommended to me, as did the listener who wrote in, one of your books called The Hands of the Emperor, which I'd be absolutely thrilled to talk to you about in a moment. But you also, as you say, connected to this, you sort of dip into the history before and later, and you use your world building to go where you want. But you also have a series which is more like a duo, two connected characters, and that starts with the Stargazy Pie book. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I enjoy writing a whole bunch of different kinds of books, and that's something I've always really liked to connect to your kind of thing. Like, I've always liked that about, say, Tolkien, where you have such different books in the same universe as The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. So I've enjoyed that, or somebody like Dorothy Sayers and her mysteries, where she writes different kinds of mysteries with the same characters. And so that's always appealed to me, that sort of stretching yourself as craft and just being able to tell different sorts of stories and focus on different elements of them. And so the Greenwing and Dart series is sort of a bit of a more, it's a duo kind of friendly, a little bit of a cozy mystery sort of underlying it there, and a bit of an adventure. Whereas The Hands of the Emperor is, it's about among many things, it's about a bureaucrat on the edge of retirement kind of thing. So I suppose in terms of genre, I just kind of say, well, I'm right in the middle of fantasy, but I tend to write these sort of slightly off kilter towards genre conventions.
Yeah. And I think that's what is so wonderful about your writing, Victoria, is that you feel really original. There's nothing wrong with reading something which fits in a genre. So if you read a romance or a detective story, you know how it's going to turn out, or a Western. Yeah, you know before you start what's going to happen, more or less, but you don't know what the journey is. Whereas when I started reading Hands of the Emperor, I had no idea what the journey was going to be. And it was a pure delight. It's a longer book. It's not a sort of thing you can knock out in a day. But I have thoroughly enjoyed my week spent with your main character, Cleopha. So, but before we come to him, I'm just thinking about the influence and place on your stories, because the Greenwing and Dart series feels quite like a sort of 18th century feel. I mean, people are the sort of small villagey town type society there, feels like that. Whereas the world of the Hands of the Emperor is very much a much bigger scale. It's got a sense of almost a mixture of the sort of Chinese bureaucracy and the exams that you used to have to do to be part of the Chinese bureaucracy, but also island culture that could be from, I don't know, Maori or Pacific Islands. I mean, you're creating your own world, but I felt that there was a sort of sample of different elements that you were going for. So as a writer, have you traveled first and gone around squirreling away all these ideas, or is it something that you think, oh, I want to do this, and then go and have a look at it?
It's a little bit of both. As I said, my family's British, and I've spent a number of visits and quite some time visiting family members in various parts of England and Wales particularly. And I did a year abroad in Scotland when I was in undergrad. And so for me, I've always really enjoyed that kind of, yes, the 19th century, sort of the Jane Austen or late 18th, early 19th century, that kind of period of the early novels. And the sort of early Regency stuff. And then also just sort of the kind of idealized vision that people have of Oxford and Cambridge and things like that. And I enjoyed playing with that and thinking about, I have an academic background. And so I enjoyed thinking about, you know, what the good parts of that and also the bad parts of that in some ways. We haven't seen that much of the university experience, but I enjoy thinking about it. And so for me, kind of travel, I once spent about 6 months walking down the length of England and staying with various relatives and friends along the way. And so that kind of sense of the landscape was a great resource for me. Otherwise, I've moved quite a lot around Canada growing up, lived in 14 places across the country. And my parents spent 10 years in Papua New Guinea, north of Australia. And so I had a lot of stories about Papua New Guinea and Australia growing up. And I think that really comes out strongly in The Hands of the Emperor with the White Seas Islander culture, which is quite strongly based on sort of historic Polynesian culture. But there's quite a lot of Papua New Guinean elements in there too, from the Trobriand Islands and the Highlands, which is where my parents lived. And so I had lots of stories and like the material culture of that my parents had, various elements of it, and friends of theirs who come to visit us, or we visited them. I've only been there once, but that I remember. I was there when I was as a baby, but as an adult, I've only been there once. And so it was a very rich experience, even being a quite short trip. So I enjoy that combination. I feel like it's important to be very respectful of other cultures, and I try really hard to not to appropriate cultural elements, especially from ones that have been, you know, historically colonized. But at the same time, I also think it's very important to try and broaden the base that you're building off of. So the Green Wing and Dart series is quite largely based off of kind of the English country tradition and country house stories too, right? Like that kind of the mysteries that you get out of or that tradition there. But the Hands of the Emperor and the world that's set in, which is Zunith, I deliberately wanted it to be a non-Western European based society. I really wanted to get away from that. So I the different parts of Zunith are drawn from different non-Western cultures as a conscious choice there.
And what the person who wrote in said is something along the lines of, I defy you not to fall in love with Cleopha. Now, Cleopha is the main character of The Hands of the Emperor. He is The Hands of the Emperor. You could describe him very boringly as bureaucrat, but actually he is just the most wonderful, wonderful character. I was saying to you just before we started recording that he reminds me very much of the Count Rostov, who is the lead figure in the fantastic novel Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, which is a historical novel, I think being filmed at the moment. But how that story works is that you just love spending time with that character. And I felt absolutely the same about Cleopha. And as you were just saying, what you're thinking about in this book are things which don't make it into fantasy. It's the stuff that's not around the battle. It's how do you hand on power? How do you retire? And there's also a really strong theme about what do the people back home think of those who have gone into another walk of life and got success elsewhere, which doesn't translate into the local context at all. They completely misunderstand him in sad ways. So when you started this book, did you start with the character and just see where it went? Or did you already have those themes in mind and then, you know, built him to fit the plot?
No, it was a very character driven different book. So my kind of general project, as I said, I write these sort of, it's a sprawling interconnected stories in my narrative universe here. And there's sort of two parallel core to that project. One of them, there's this empire called the Empire of Astandalaz, which has this catastrophic, cataclysmic, magical collapse that happens. And so it's sort of, one of my projects is the lead up to that collapse and then what happens afterwards. I'm not really a dystopian kind of writer. I'm really much more interested in how do you rebuild, what happens afterwards. But that kind of shadow that falls across the entire cultures and individuals is something that I find very interesting to think about. And I think this connects back to something like Tolkien and the shadow of World War I that's always behind all those authors of the first half of the 20th century. And I've always found that interwar period quite interesting for that, with people not always talking directly about it, but it's always there. And so in my novels, that kind of the fall of Astandalaz is that culture-wide devastation that people don't always talk about, but is always there. So that's one part of the project. And then the second part of the project is this figure of one character, and who is called Fitzroy Ingersoll, and he's a main character in various books and referred to in other ones. He's this poet. And so as part of that, one thing I was interested in with the fall of Astandalaz and the effects of it was the character of the last emperor of Astandalaz, who survives this destruction and ends up having to kind of rebuild on a personal level. And so I started off writing this, what was going to be a short vignette about the last emperor and what he was like in the period after things had sort of settled down after the fall. And I thought, oh, his secretary is probably a good window onto what he's like as a person. And so I started writing about his secretary, and it was really only intended to be a couple of scenes, or maybe one scene. Like, that was all I was doing. And by the end of the scene, I had fallen in love with Cleofer as a character. He was just so interesting, and he just kind of kept going. And that was, the story was an unusual one to write, because I usually have more of a sense of what the story is to start with, or at least, like, I often know what the emotional tone I want to end with is, or like the denouement. I don't always know what the climax is, but I usually know what the denouement is and where the characters end up. And so for that one, I had no sense of what the arc was at first. I just kind of kept, but I kept being drawn to writing scenes, and I just kept imagining them, like I'd be driving, or I'd be, you know, taking the dogs for a walk or something, and the scene would come into mind, and I just have to go write it. And so for, I don't know, a year and a half, maybe 2 years, I just kind of kept going back to it and picking away at it. And I was enjoying writing it so much. Like, I just loved spending time with Cleofer. And eventually I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not getting any other books done. I'm just going to focus on this one and see where it takes me. And eventually at that point, I realized that the reason I had had so much problem seeing what the arc was because it was an incredibly long book. And so I'd written, you know, 80,000 words, which is normally coming towards the end of a novel that I usually write. But that's really, I mean, not even a third of the way through this one. So the kind of character arc was just really getting going. And so, yeah, I just loved writing it. So the character really drove that story. I had a sense of what was going on with the emperor, and I knew at some point he was going to be leaving. You know, there's some elements there, but Cleofer as a character just sort of shouldered his way into being sort of one of my favorites and a really important person in my stories.
I think it's a very good illustration of how it is that characters are the things that draw us to books, because the slice of one person's life through these momentous events is a really fascinating one to take, because he passes through the fall and the mm-hmm. rebuilding. He's had his own personal journey, but no, which lots of people, you could have written the book about his journey home. He has this time in his life where he wants to go and find out what's happened to his family, but nobody's interested. So he only gets to tell it right later on in life. And that itself is a really fascinating sort of, it's dodging the most obvious, like, it's not a quest in that standard sense. It's not a there and back again except I suppose it is, but not in the sort of Tolkien-esque setting out to find a dragon way. And what I thought was fabulous about it was the way that you're really expanding a sort of, this is what fantasy can do. And finding a really original area to explore the stuff between main events. Well, main events are happening, but the focus is on the experience of a man passing through those. So I would can't recommend it enough, listeners. Go and you need a while. I think I would say that stick with it, because I couldn't understand it to start with. I thought, well, why are we on holiday with this guy? You know, why have we started there? And you don't get it until you think, ah, okay. And something really big happens where he takes a decision, and that has the consequences then, kind of like the first domino that goes down, and the rest of the book follows. So yeah, fantastic.
Well, thank you. I think for me with that book, one of the things I find that I just find endlessly fascinating too is, and for me, I feel like that question of, you have a family that you love, but you have a desire to go traveling or to go and do other things, and they may or may not understand that, is a very true one. We're not all orphans, you know, with fates and whatnot. Like, you can just want to have those adventures. And that's something I explore in different parts of my stories, those kind of complicated families that that are there. Because I feel like, I don't know, the people who love their families, and you can still have a complicated relationship, no matter if you love them and are loved by them very well. But it doesn't stop you from having those desires, but it makes them much more complicated. And I find that, so like, that's a thread through that story too, and kind of found families as well, and how that interacts with your biological family, friendship. Those are themes that I find really important too.
Thank you for listening to part one of this week's podcast. Come back next week to hear part two. Thank you for listening to Mythmakers.
Thanks for listening to Mythmakers Podcast, brought to you by the Oxford Centre for Fantasy. Visit oxfordcentreforfantasy.org to join in the fun. Find out about our online courses, in-person stays in Oxford, plus visit our shop for great gifts. Tell a friend and subscribe wherever you find your favourite podcasts worldwide.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.